Genesis chapter 13, we're going to be looking at the whole chapter, and I probably won't read the entire chapter, but we'll be looking at the contents of the whole chapter here. After Abraham had a bad experience down in Egypt, remember he went down to Egypt to get away from the famine, and when he was down there in Egypt, he talked Sarah into telling a lie and saying that she was his sister. Well, she was kind of his sister, his half-sister. But she was also his wife. And Pharaoh took her, and he was going to marry her, and she was in big trouble. And God plagued Pharaoh, and Pharaoh figured out what was happening, and Pharaoh kicked him out of the country and says, "You leave now, because you caused us all this trouble and grief." And Pharaoh gave him, remember, Pharaoh gave him a lot of presents, and probably, very likely, it was dowry to pay him off for Sarah, as he was buying her as a wife. That's what it appears like. So he's given him all these presents and gifts. And Abraham really got burned in all that bad situation. And we find that in chapter 13 that Abraham has learned his lesson. And notice what he does. This is kind of preparatory to what we're going to be talking about here this evening, but it's an important preparatory. Look at verse number 1. And Abraham went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold, and he went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first, and there Abram called on the name of the Lord. So what did Abraham do? He got right with God. He got right with God. Now, take a look at my map here. He'd been down here in Egypt. Egypt's out and down over here. And he went back to the south land. Well, he didn't go south. South would have been down there. But he went to the south of Israel, where he was supposed to go. Went back to the south. He's up in this area. And finally, he went up to Ai, which is just above Jerusalem. It's kind of between Jerusalem and the A of that Judea there. It's right in here. It's where Ai was. And Bethel was right next to Ai. And that's where he had made an altar previously to the Lord. He went back to the place where he built that altar. And he rebuilt that altar and worshiped the Lord there. So Abraham was getting right with God. You know, anytime we make a mistake, and life is full of mistakes. And if you haven't made any mistakes yet, you will. Alright? We make many mistakes in life. We make wrong turns. We take the wrong direction. We go the wrong way. And when we do that, the right thing to do, and the only thing that's going to help us, is to get right with God. We need to get right with God, and that's exactly what Abraham did. Remember what James said over there, one of the first verses we had in our quiz tonight, James chapter 4, verse 8. He said, "Draw nigh to God, and He'll draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners. Purify your heart, ye double-minded." So God's saying to us, when you get out of line and you take a step out of the way that you're supposed to go, you need to draw back to God, draw near to God, and God will draw near to you. And it's very important that we see this. You know, whenever we aren't as close to God as we once were, who moved? It wasn't God. God is our rock. He doesn't move. He's always the same. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And any time we're not in this closeness that we were with God, it's because we moved, not God. And so we need to come back to God. Abram had moved. God told him to stay in Canaan. And he moved and went down to Egypt. And he had to go back to Canaan in order to get right with God and get back into where God wanted to be. And so it's important for us to see that, keep that in mind. Now, that is all kind of preparatory to what is taking place here. Perhaps you've lived long enough in your life to realize that after God gives you a special victory, maybe you've had an answer to prayer, God has done something great in your life, maybe you've been able to be a witness for the Lord, you're just feeling kind of energized by, you know, things are going great and I'm having a good time with God and things are wonderful, and then all of a sudden, bang, you fall flat on your face or have some trial or trouble that comes your way. And if that hasn't happened to you, it will one of these days, because the devil's good at that. He loves to pick on us and trip us up and get us troubled after we've had a victory. So remember, whenever we've had a victory, we need to be on guard, we need to be ready, because the devil wants to trip us up. And that's exactly what was taking place here in Abram's life. Abram got right with God. He went back to Bethel. He rebuilt the altar. He worshiped God. And he's gotten back right with God. And things are going well with him. But then trouble starts up. And he runs into conflicts. And this evening I want us to see that a lot of these conflicts were between Abram and Lot, his nephew. And as we look at these conflicts, I want us to notice, first of all, the conflicts, and then the choices that they made, and then the consequences because of the choices. And so we'll look at those three different sections here tonight. Let's notice, first of all, the conflicts, verses 5 to 7. Verse 5 says, "And Lot also," now remember, Lot was his younger nephew. He said, "And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdsmen of Abram's cattle and the herdsmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelt in the land." All right, now, as you think about this, first of all, we see here that there was a conflict between Lot and Abram. Now, I've often wondered, and I can't really answer the question, should have Abram left Lot back in Haran, up in the north? Haran was way up here. Should have he left him up in Haran when God said, "Leave your family and go down there"? I don't really know an answer to that. It appears like at that time, that Abram was his guardian. He was taking care of him. Lot was his other brother's son, and his brother had already died. And so it appears that Abram is taking care of Lot. He's watching over him. Whether he should have left him in Haran, and I don't know, that's not the issue, but the problem is that he did have him with him, and Lot's going around with him, traveling around with Abram, and they've gotten now so much possession that Lot's got his own family and his tents. Notice here it says here that he had all that stuff of his own, and his flocks and his herds and his tents, and all this of Lot's, but then Abram's got all his. And now what's happening? You know, they had just gotten back, there had been a famine. Well, when there's a famine, what happens? Well, then when there's a famine, the grass is short. And the cattle have a hard time finding pastures for the sheep and for the cows and the camels and all these things. And they're finding hard to find enough pasture for them. And Lot's servants are saying, "Hey, we got this spot first. What are you guys in here for? Get your sheep out of here. This is our spot." No. We were here last week, and so we came back this week. And they're arguing back and forth and fussing about who can pasture their land there. And maybe they're arguing over the water holes, because famine, dry times, difficult to find water. Maybe there was some wells that they had dug, and they're having to dip down and pull out the water for all the sheep, and they're probably arguing over the water holes. They're probably arguing over the paddocks to feed the sheep in. They're probably arguing over, you know, even places of shelter to protect them during storm. And all these things were important to the farmers, and so these were things that Abram and Lot now were struggling with, because they both had so much possession, and they were just too large for them, and they needed more space. Now this reminds us of an important family principle that God gives us in the Scriptures. You know, remember back there in Genesis chapter 2, when God ordained marriage, in Genesis chapter 2 and verse number 24, God said, "Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one," or "they shall be one flesh." Right, the twain was in Matthew, but here he says they were to leave and cleave. So they were to leave father and mother. And that is a very important principle. Because if you try to build your home in mom and dad's backyard or under their same roof, you're going to have problems. And sometimes people do that because they say, "Well, you can't afford to buy another place, and what else can we do? And mom and dad's got an extra room." And it just doesn't work very good. No matter how nice mom and dad are, you know, you can have the greatest mom and dad there is, but it's difficult to have two heads under one house. Right? And the new husband needs to be the head of his wife and the head of this home, and you have two heads in one home, and then there's going to be conflicts. Same thing we see here in the situation with Abraham and Lot, and it caused troubles. Now, their herdsmen were at strife. There was quarreling over these things. And then also notice there a very important little phrase that's easy to pass right over at the end of verse 7. Notice it says, "And the Canaanite and Perizzite were dwelt then in the land." Now, the Canaanite and the Perizzite were there first. Abram and Lot were kind of intruders. So these other guys really had the rights to the land. They were the first people there. And they were there trying to take care of their sheep and their cattle. And now Abram and all of his sheep and all of his cattle and Lot and all of his, they come in there. There was probably some conflicts with the Canaanites and Perizzites as well. So they're all trying to find enough land for their sheep and their grass for their sheep and their cattle. And it's becoming difficult. And so there's tension. There's tension with the Canaanites and Perizzites. There's tension between Lot and Abram. There's tensions between all of them. It's a difficult time and a hard time for them. So there's all these conflicts that are taking place. And this tension becomes quite severe between Abram and Lot. You know, conflicts are common. And we all understand what that's like. We all go through conflicts from time to time. And you know, as you think about conflicts, you can have conflicts with your spouse if you're married. There's conflicts maybe with the children or with in-laws and relatives and with neighbors, maybe with the boss even. No, there's all these times where there's potential conflicts. And conflicts maybe over personalities. You know, we just don't get along. You know, that he's just so different than I am. We just have personality conflicts. Or maybe it's over in a marriage, over child discipline. The husband says, no, we need to do it this way. And the wife says, no, I don't think so. We need to do it this way. And there's conflicts over child discipline. Sometimes it's over job demands. You know, the husband maybe has to work too much. And as a result, it makes tension in the home. And the wife has responsibilities. And she's got to do stuff that he would normally do. And it causes tension. And then there's lack of family time. That the devil wants to gobble up so that we don't have the time with them. And there's the lifestyle desires, you know, where maybe one of the spouses. You see, this is one of the reasons why it's so very important for young people to know each other well enough before they marry. Because what happens is when the wife is used to a very high class lifestyle, and he's used to being more of a farm boy, and they're going to have some conflicts because she's used to everything really nicey-nicey, and he's used to just, well, anything I'll do. We're on the farm. Who cares? And so there's going to be conflicts here. And those things, you know, they may look small, but they become big conflicts later on. Then there's debts that cause grief and conflicts to a lot of people. Music even can cause conflicts. Entertainment, the choice of friends, and the list goes on and on and on. There's all kinds of things that can cause conflicts in our lives. And these things are real. They're genuine. But when we face these conflicts, what are we supposed to do? Well, the first thing we need to do is do like Abraham did. We need to get right with God. We need to draw near to God and say, God, I need your help. We're having conflicts. Doesn't matter whether it's you and your spouse or you and your friend or you and your kids. We're having conflicts. We need help. And we draw near to God and say, God, help us. Show us what to do. Show us how to resolve this problem so that we can resolve these things and have happiness and peace again. And the verses that I mentioned, we went through this evening, James chapter 1, verse 19 and 21, and then in Matthew 18, 15 to 17. And I'm not going to read through the whole list. We read the whole thing. There's about 15, 20 verses there. I challenge you to download the notes, get the list, and have a good look at it, and look those verses up. And they're good verses to mark in your Bible because they're verses that will help us during conflicts. How do we deal with it? You know, verses like that, Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer makes a big help. You know, if you're having a conflict, the best thing you can do is to talk gently and calmly. But that's not our natural thing to do. We want to defend our rights and defend my position. And so we get riled up and we say things we shouldn't say and tones that we shouldn't say. So a soft answer is important. And all the way through there of instruction that he gives us, even salting our words with salt to keep them nice so that they're gentle and we're to be forgiving and we're to be tender and all those kind of things. So look those up. They can be a big help to you. Now, we've looked at the conflicts, but now let's take a look at the choices. Abraham made a very selfless offer to Lot. A very selfless offer. Notice verse number 8. And Abraham said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. And if thou wilt depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. What a selfless thing. Abram's much older. He's the uncle. He's the one that seems to be the guardian over Lot. And yet Abram turns to him and said, listen, Lot, let's not fight about it. Let's not argue about it. Let's not have any harsh words. You choose where you want. If you go this way, I'll go that way. If you go that way, I'll go this way. It doesn't matter. It's okay. You choose. All right? So he gives this totally free choice to Lot. Now, Abram had every right to say, listen, Lot, I'm your uncle. I'm older than you. I'm probably wiser than you. But that doesn't really matter. I'm in charge. And I'm taking this place over here. That's what I like. And you can take anything else you want, but you stay away from my place. He had the right to do that. He could have. And he could have very easily said that. And, you know, we wouldn't blame him for doing that. But he didn't. He chose to let Lot make a choice. And, you know, we live in a selfish, self-centered, self-loving, egotistic society. A society that focuses on me. And our selfish nature is a sinful nature. Our selfish nature wants what we want. And God tells us, is this going to get any better in the last days? I mean, there's a certain amount of people that have this idea that the world's going to get better and better and better and better until the Lord comes and is going to set up his kingdom. We don't see that happening. We don't see that happening at all. In fact, the Bible tells us there in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verses 1 and 2, he says, this know also that in the last days perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. Now that sounds like our world. That sounds like things around us, doesn't it? It really does. And so he says that's going to happen in the last days. Now, the principle of putting others first is one that will sweeten our relationships. It'll sweeten our marriages. It'll sweeten our friendships. And it'll honor the Lord. And it builds relationships. And yet, that is hard. It's hard to put others first. Even in a marriage, it's difficult to always say, sweetheart, you choose. I'll give it to you. It's your choice. And we always give the other person the opportunity to take the first choice. You know, consider some of what the Lord says about this as he tells us how to put others first. We read in Romans chapter 12 and verse number 10, be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love and honor, preferring one another. Preferring one another, saying, you choose. Doesn't matter to me. I'll take whatever's left over. You choose. We find another one in Romans 15:1. We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak and not to please ourselves. Instead of saying, I don't really care what they think. I'm going to do what I want to do. God says, no, don't do that. They're strong. They're weak and you're strong. You need to help them. You need to consider that and not to please yourself. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 3, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. Not easy to do. To lift up somebody else better than ourselves. It's not our natural desire. And Lot, how did he respond? All right, here he is, young Lot. I don't think he was a little kid. But he's a young man, had lots of things of his own. He already had a family. He had all these tents and servants. And he was wealthy too. Hanging around with Abraham got him a lot. And how did he respond? Did he say, oh, that's all right, Uncle Abraham. You just choose. It's okay. Not a chance. Lot said, whoa. You mean I could go anywhere I want? It can be mine. And Abraham said, yeah, it's your choice. And he looks around, and as he's standing up here looking, they're up here probably in Bethel in this area. They had traveled to the area over, and he said, I know where I want. Down next to the Jordan River, and down along this area, and down near the bottom of the Dead Sea at that time was lush and rich, and there was lots of vegetation and lots of greenery. He says, that's where I'm going. And Abraham said, okay, that's fine. You go there, I'll go over to the hills. Abram went over to Hebron, and Lot went down here along the southern part of the Dead Sea, where it was lush and green and the vegetation was great. But as we look at Lot's choice, what do we see? He was made a choice based on the flesh. We see there in verse number 10, it says, "And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld the land, all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere from before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you comest unto Zoar." Right now, he makes three statements. He looked at the plain of Jordan, so all along the edge of Jordan and all the way down along here. He said it was well watered and it was lush and it was beautiful. He says, "That's where I want to go." And he said it was like the garden of the Lord. All right, and then he described it as like Egypt as it was in Zoar. All right, so when they're down in Egypt, it was lush down there. There was lots of vegetation. There was lots of good places for the sheep and stuff of that nature. He said, it reminds me of that when we were down there. That's what I want. And he said, that's where I'm going to take it. And Lot chose him, verse 11, all the plain of Jordan. And Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves one from the other. And Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain. And he pitched his tent towards Sodom. But then notice verse number 13. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. Now, when we look at this here, Lot chose based on his flesh. We see, first of all, he followed his greedy desires, and we saw that as he was lusting over those things. He also lacked discernment. You know, when we're making choices, one of the best things, if there was just one thing that we could get, I mean, not talking about salvation, but one quality that we can get that would help us immensely, that quality is discernment. The ability to make right choices. Discernment and wisdom are very closely linked. To be discerning, to be able to say, "Oh, I smell something bad over here. That doesn't look just right. No, I'm not going to go there. We're going to go this way." There's a proverb there that says, talks about seeing the evil and going the other direction instead. And that's exactly what we mean by discernment. It's prudence. It's discernment. It's a certain amount of wisdom. And we need that. But he chose the plain of Jordan. He chose the Jordan Valley. It was a good place to raise sheep, but it was a bad place to raise a family. And you know, you think about that. We're going to see Lot's family in the weeks to come as we dig into the next chapters. What happened to his family? As far as we can tell, every one of them went to hell. That's sad. I mean, his wife, she loved the world so much, God said, "Do not turn back and look when I'm going to blow up Sodom." And she couldn't resist. She turned around and looked, and God froze her into a pillar of salt. And then the two daughters were only ones that escaped the fire. They both committed incest with him. Now, whether they got right with God, I don't know. I'm not the judge. But it doesn't look good for Lot's family. You know, you would look at all of Lot, and if Peter hadn't told us in the book of 2 Peter chapter, let me see, where was it? 2 Peter somewhere. I had it in my notes. Oh, 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 8. If God hadn't told us that he was a just man, you'd have a hard time proving it any other way. You look at Lot's life. He went down to Sodom. He lived in Sodom. He was so accustomed to Sodom, he was now sitting in the gate. That's where the leader sat. He's sitting in the gate of the men of Sodom. The Sodomites were wicked, and he knew that. He knew they were wicked. And remember when later on we're going to see when the angels were staying in his house, and the men of the city came knocking on the door, and he knew what they were there for. He knew that these men were homosexuals, and they were trying to get these visitors that were there with him. And he said, "No, man, don't do that. That's it. Here, take my girls instead." I mean, what is wrong with your head? I mean, this guy has really lost his spiritual walk with God. And he had gotten so far away from God. And so Lot didn't have the discernment that he needed. He couldn't see what it was going to lead him to. And, you know, as we look at this, we see that he made his decision based on gain, not godliness. He made his decision based on pride, not piety, and on worldliness, not wisdom. He lacked what God needed, wanted him to have in order to make right choices and the right decisions. And we need discernment. Every one of us this week will be making decisions. And when we make those decisions, we need God's discernment and His wisdom to make right choices so that we don't make a choice that will hurt us or our family or our reputation or our walk with God in some future date. Now also we see here that he left God out of his life. As far as we can tell here, there's no indication that Lot even considered what God might have involved in this. Nothing's mentioned about him seeking God or asking God for advice. He chose to live among the wicked Sodomites, even though he knew they were wicked. And we need to be very careful of our choice of people that we hang around. And I realize, you know, just because we live on a certain street doesn't mean that, you know, we bought that street because they're all Christians on that street. You know, that just doesn't happen. But at the same time, we need to be careful when we're who we choose to be around, because the people we choose to be around are going to have a great influence on us, and that was true in Lot's family as well. And the influence of Sodom destroyed his family, completely destroyed his children. Remember, we'll see that in a couple of weeks here, of how when the angel said, "Get your children, get out of here," and he went and told his children, and what did they do? They laughed at him. "Dad, you're crazy. God blow up the city? That's never going to happen. Go away, Dad. You're nuts." They laughed at him. And because he had lost his kids' respect. Now, what does God tell us to do when we face decisions? Well, he tells us we need to pray for wisdom, James 1:5. He tells us also that we need to be wise toward good and simple toward evil, Romans chapter 16, verse 19. God also tells us we're to prove all things. Remember there in 1 Thessalonians 5, 21-22, prove all things, hold fast that which is good, abstain from all appearance of evil. If it even looks bad, stay away from it. Don't go near it. It's going to hurt us. And God says, I want you to look beyond the present pleasures to the future or the potential things that are going to happen. So often we just look at right now, and it's nice right now, and I like it right now, and this is going to be good right now, but we don't even think about what's going to happen if I do this. It's just like this week I've been trying to catch the mice that have been pestering my chicken pen. And I'll set out all kinds of traps, and they just kind of ignore the traps. They're smarter than my traps. But I got one way that I've caught more mice this way than any other way. I take pumpkin seeds and I jam them down on the little pokey that sticks out of a snapper mouse trap. And they can't get it off of there. And so they start tugging on it. As soon as they do, they made a wrong choice. And the result was damaging. Right? And sometimes we do the same thing. We look at something and say, it looks so good. It tastes so nice. I really like that. And we don't think about what is going to be the result until it's too late. And many times we can't fully recover. And certainly that was true with Lot. He made a choice to go down to Sodom, and he never recovered. He never recovered. It destroyed his home and his family and his life. But Abraham, what did Abraham do? Well, Abraham took the leftovers. Abraham said, "You go this way, I'll go the other way." And when you read the story, you won't find one hint of Abraham saying, "Oh, that Lot, what did he take that for? That was the nicest ground around." He didn't complain. He said, "Okay, fine. You get on there, I'll go the other way." And he put others first in a truly genuine way. And what a great example for us. You know, I look at that and I think, you know, that's what I need. To always put others first instead of me first. I need to practice that more. And so we have a great example here in Abraham of doing what was right, putting others first and letting others be first. Now, the consequences. What happened? Well, Lot gained what he could not keep. He got wealthy. He had good pastures for his sheep and cattle. No question about that. But he chose to live among the wicked sinners and make them his good friends. And he focused on his fortune and he neglected his family. And as a result, lost it all. He lost it all. And you know, in the latter years of Lot's life, I would strongly imagine that Lot looked back on it and thought, what a fool I've been. I had it all. Now I got nothing. I had a family. Now I got none. I had a fortune. It all burned up in Sodom. I lost it all. Lost it all. And I'm sure that Lot looked back at it with grief and sorrow in his heart. He had to have. He was a human. He understood it, looking back at it. But Abraham maintained God's blessing. We find here in verse 14. And the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot had separated from him, lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art northward and southward and eastward and westward. All right, so here he was in Bethel at that time. He says, look north and south and east and west. And then he says here in verse 15, for all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land, in the length of it and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Then Abram removed his tent and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. So Abram here, after he'd been up here in Bethel, he moved, he'd come down to Hebron, and he built an altar there, and he followed God's advice. God said, you look north, you look south, you look east, you look west, it's all yours. It's going to belong to your family someday. And God made this promise to him. Now God did not say, it's too bad, Abram. If you would have gotten that lush, rich land down there near Sodom, you could have been rich. You could have been wealthy. Things would have been well for you. God didn't say that. God says, don't worry about it. You don't need that lush land down there. I'm the one that blesses. It doesn't matter whether you have all that lush land. I'm the one that blesses. See, Abram went where there wasn't so much nice grass, and there wasn't so much nice water, and there wasn't so many nice things that from a material standpoint. And as a result, God said, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to bless you abundantly. And God did bless him. And Lot, he took the stuff selfishly that looked nice and seemed nice and looked the best and ended up in ruin. So there's some things here for us to learn here tonight. If, like Lot, your choices are fleshly and selfish, you may gain the prosperity and pleasure and popularity and prestige of this world, but you'll have a whole eternity to regret it. It doesn't last. On the other hand, if you, like Abram, live godly and selfless and invest your time, talents, and treasures in God's work, you'll reap the dividends for eternity. That's the way to go. To live for God. Matthew chapter 16, verse 26 says, for what shall a man profit if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? What shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Sometimes people look at that and look at it as though he's losing his, by soul, his life, and he's going to die. That's one way of looking at it, but it appears, if you study the whole passage, that his soul refers to that which is really valuable in his life. That which is really valuable. You gain the whole world, but you lose what really matters. What have you gained? Nothing. But if you gain what really matters and lose the world, you've gained it all. And that's the thing that's important for us to remember. It doesn't matter what this world has to offer. It matters what God has to offer. So put God first. Make the right choices. Make choices based on God's will. God will bless you for it. And if you make the choices based on your flesh, it's not going to be good. It's not going to be good. If you've already made some of those wrong choices, I'm so glad that God's put verses like 1 John 1:9 in the Bible. If we confess our sin, He's faithful and just to forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. He said if you've done wrong, you come to God and you confess it. Maybe there's some here tonight that have never even trusted Jesus Christ, your Savior. If you died right now, you wouldn't even go to heaven. You'd go to hell. The right thing to do is to humble yourself before God and say, God, I need you more than I need anything else. I need forgiveness. I need cleansing. I need your eternal life. You cry out to God and ask God to save your soul, and He will. He'll save your soul if you'll ask Him from a genuine heart. And so we need to remember the right thing to do is to turn to God and seek His help in making choices in life. And God will bless you if you'll do that. And just like Abram, you can say, God promises to bless those who do right. We see that over and over again in Scripture. And it's true today, too, as well.